When we return to Spence, I search for Kartik's bandana in the ivy under my window, but it isn't there, and I hope that he'll return with news soon. "Have you seen Anne?" Felicity asks when I step into the great hall. "She disappeared after dinner. I thought we were to play cards." "I haven't," I answer, "but I'll go and have a look, shall I?" Felicity nods. "I'll be in my tent." Anne isn't to be found in any of her usual haunts, our room, the library, the kitchen. I know of only one other place, and that is where I find her, sitting alone on the third floor terrace that overlooks the lawn and the woods beyond. "Care for some company?" I ask. She gestures to the empty spot on the railing. From here I have a perfect view of the half-completed turret and the skeletal east wing. I wonder if my mother and her friend Sarah ever experienced the sort of happiness we did today. I wonder what they might have changed if they'd had the chance. A gentle breeze blows. Far off I can see the lights of the gypsy camp. Kartik. No, I shan't think about him just now. "I thought you'd be packing for your trip to the world stages," I say. "We shan't leave until next week. It will be here before you know it. What's that?" I point to the sealed envelope in her lap. "Oh," Anne says, fiddling with it. "I can't seem to post it. It's a letter to my cousins, informing them of my decision. Was I really all right today?" "You were magnificent," I tell her. "Your voice enchanted them." Anne stares out at the lawn. They only wanted to hear me because they liked what they saw first. "And don't go lying to me and say that we're judged on our character, because that's rubbish." She laughs, but there's no mirth in it. "Beauty is power, and my life would be far easier if I were as beautiful as Nan Washbrad." Anne is lovely, but not in the way that matters to her. She's not a beauty. It is the careful knowing of her over time that makes her handsome. But that's not what she wants to hear. And even if I did say she was beautiful, even if I meant it, would she believe it? "Yes, it's easier if you're beautiful," I say. "The rest of us have to try harder." She smooths out the letter in her lap, and I fear that I've wounded her with my honesty. I squeeze her hand. "You've done it, Anne. You've changed your life. I'll say it to anyone who will listen. Anne Bradshaw is the bravest girl I know." "Gemma, how will I explain to them? Either I keep up this illusion forever, or I find a way to make them believe in Anne Bradshaw." "We'll sort it out. We need only enough magic to convince them they hired Anne in the first place. You'll do the rest with your talent. That's your magic." But I know how she feels. It's getting harder to imagine giving this up. I want to hold tightly to it and never let go. "It was a good day, wasn't it?" A small smile dispels the worry on Anne's face. "And better days to come." Anne turns the letter over in her hands. "Guess I'd best get it over with." I present my arm like a courtier. "It isn't every day I'm privileged to escort a star of the stage." "Thank you, Lady Doyle," she says, as if entering stage right for her bow. She walks straight up to Bridget and offers her the letter with a hasty, "Bridget, will you post this for me tomorrow?" "Course I will," Bridget says, tucking it into her apron pocket. "There, now that's done," I say. "Yes, done. Come on then, Fee wants to play cards, and I'm determined she'll not whip us at it as she always does." Buoyed by Anne's success, the three of us sit up playing hand after hand, wagering wishes like shillings. "I'll see your dream of becoming Princess of the Ottoman Empire, and I'll raise you one journey into Bombay riding on an elephant's back." Anne wins most rounds, and not even Fee minds. She swears it's further proof that Anne has changed her luck at last, and that nothing is beyond us now.